I am now going to read chapter 4 of Ajahn Sujin's book on the perfections. Chapter 4, The Perfection of Renunciation. The commentary to the Basket of Conduct defines the perfection of renunciation as follows, and I quote, "Renunciation, nekama, has the characteristic of departing from sense pleasures and existence. Its function is to verify the unsatisfactoriness they involve. Its manifestation is the withdrawal from them. A sense of spiritual urgency, samvega, is its proximate cause." Unquote. The perfection of renunciation is the giving up of pleasure, clinging, and the ways of wrong thinking that are sensuous thinking, kama vitaka, thinking of hate, viyadapada vitaka, and thinking of cruelty, vihimsa vitaka. These unwholesome ways of thinking can be given up by becoming a monk or by the development of satipatthana. When someone gives up thoughts of sense pleasures, of hate, and of harming others, he is developing the perfection of renunciation. Generally, people believe that one can practice renunciation only by becoming a monk. But in order to understand the real meaning of renunciation, we have to consider the different types of citta that are thinking, be they kusala or akusala. We usually think in our daily life in an unwholesome way of the sense objects, of visible objects, sound, odor, flavor, and tangible object. Thus, there is sensuous thinking, kama vitaka. Can we avoid thinking of sense object with pleasure, infatuation, and clinging? The opposite of sensuous thinking is thinking of renunciation, nekama vitaka. Renunciation, departing from sense pleasures, is practiced not only by entering the state of monkhood, which is a superior state, but it can also be practiced by lay people in daily life. Did we ever consider to abandon sense pleasures? Are we becoming disenchanted with sense objects? We have attachment to visible objects, sound, and the other sense objects. We do not have to give them up. But do we want ever more to have these attachments? If we have not yet enough of them, we give in to sensuous thinking, whereas if we find that we have quite sufficient of them, we have thoughts of renunciation. When we continue to crave for ever more sense pleasures, it shows that we have still defilements. We ask ourselves whether we wish to have more defilements. Each time we are attached to visible objects and the other sense objects, defilements arise. If we do not realize that we have already a great deal of defilements, the thought of renunciation will not arise. We may want to obtain ever more pleasant sense objects and never be contented with what we have already. But we do not have to become a monk in order to develop renunciation. We could ask ourselves whether we have already enough pleasant things, and whether we wish to have ever and ever more of them. It may happen that we, for example, do not wish to buy more clothing, again that merely serve as beautification of the body, and we may consider that we have that what we have is more than sufficient. In that case, there is just renunciation in daily life. we should begin to investigate and consider, with regard to ourselves, whether our possessions are already sufficient. We should become contented with what we have. If we obtain more than we need, we could give it away if it can be of use to others. In that way, the perfection of renunciation gradually develops. Instead of sensuous thinking, there can be thinking of renunciation. If we want to eradicate defilements, it is essential to consider the perfections in our daily life. We should reflect on the Buddha's former lives, on his conduct leading to Buddhahood. We may think the stories about his former lives just very ordinary, but, in fact, these stories deal with the perfections the Bodhisattva developed during all those lives. We read in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct, the conduct of Sona Nanda, and I quote, "At that time, the Bodhisattva passed away from the Brahma world and was born as the son of a Brahmin magnate who had a possession worth 80 crores in the city of Brahmavadana. His parents called him young Sona. When Sona could walk, another being passed away from the Brahma world, and he too was conceived by the Bodhisattva's mother. When he was born, they called him young Nanda. The venerable Ananda was at that time Nanda. When their parents observed how handsome the boys were, they let them be educated in all the liberal arts, and they wanted them to marry. However, the Bodhisattva did not wish to marry. He wanted to look after his parents during their whole life, and after their death he wanted to retire from worldly life. His parents tried to persuade him to marry, but the Bodhisattva was firmly convinced that he should become an ascetic. Thereupon his parents wanted to entrust their possessions to Nanda instead, but Nanda said, 'Since my older brother Sona did not accept your possessions, I will not accept them either, and I shall also become an ascetic.' The parents were much surprised that their two sons wanted in their young age to give up their possessions and retire from worldly life. When they noticed the firm determination of their sons, and saw that they were able to become ascetics, although they were quite young, they also wanted to retire from worldly life. And at that time they built an hermitage in the wood, and the two brothers looked after their parents. The sage Nanda thought, 'We shall just gather fruits as food for our parents.' He would bring fruits that were left over from the previous day, or that he had gathered on previous days, and gave them to his parents to eat early in the morning. When they had eaten them, they would rinse their mouths and observe a fast. But the sage Sona went somewhat further away to gather sweet and ripe fruits with a delicious flavor and offered these to them. His parents said to Sona, 'We have already eaten, and we are observing a fast, and therefore we have no need of these fruits.' However, the fruits that the sage Nanda had gathered before in order to give to his parents early in the morning were sometimes spoiled. Thereupon the Bodhisattva thought, 'My parents are delicate. They belong to a high caste, and thus they should not eat fruits that are not good. Sometimes they are spoiled or unripe. Nanda brings all kinds of half-ripe or unripe fruits for them to eat, and therefore they will not live long.' And he wanted to stop Nanda from doing this and addressed him with the words, 'From now on, when you have gathered fruits for our parents, You have to wait until I have returned, and then we shall both at the same time supply them with food. They should not merely eat the fruits of Nanda." When the sage Sona had spoken thus, the sage Nanda did not follow up what his brother said, because he hoped to gain merit for himself. He hoped that his parents would eat only the fruits that he had brought himself. When the Bodhisatta noticed that the sage Nanda paid no heed to his words, he told him to go somewhere else, and that he himself would take care of his parents. When the sage Nanda was dismissed by his brother, he took leave of the Bodhisatta and of his parents. He developed the 8 attainments and the 5 higher powers, and then he wanted to ask his brother's forgiveness." Unquote. These are the thoughts of someone who has accumulated the perfections and knows what is proper and what not. We read further on about the sage Nanda's thoughts. I quote, "He, Nanda, thought, 'If I wish to ask my brother forgiveness, it should be in the most superior way.' He, Nanda, was wondering how he should achieve this. He thought that in order to ask his brother for forgiveness, he would bring Sakka, the king of the Devas, from the heaven of the 33. But he found this improper. Since he and his brother were still in this world, it was more suitable, he thought, to bring the chief king Manoja, who resided in Brahmavadana and who was more powerful than the other kings. He would tell King Manoja that he wanted to ask his brother forgiveness. When he had thought about this, he went to the palace of King Manoja and said, 'I will get the sovereignty over all India and offer it to you. But I would pray you to see my elder brother so that I will be forgiven by him.' Finally, Nanda could ask his brother forgiveness and was forgiven by him. The Bodhisatta let the sage Nanda look after their mother, whereas he looked after their father for as long as they lived. The Bodhisatta taught Dhamma with the graceful poise of a Buddha to King Manoja in the following way: 'Joy, careless ease, laughter and sport are the sure heritage of him that studiously shall tend a mother in old age. Joy, careless ease, laughter and sport are the sure heritage of him that studiously shall tend to a father in old age. Gifts, loving speech, kind offices, together with the grace of calm neutrality of mind shown in due time and place, these virtues to the world are as a linchpin to chariot wheel. If these virtues are lacking, parents do not receive respect and reverence from their children.'" Unquote. Thus, if someone does not give assistance to one's parents in this way, he has no reverence for his parents. We read further on, I quote, "The parents should be revered, and the wise approve of the man in whom these virtues may be found. They say that the parents are like Brahma. They own a high position and are worthy of respect. Therefore, the wise give respect to them and honor them with service, providing them with food, drink, clothing, beds, by bathing and anointing them, and washing their feet. Sages praise in this world people who look after their parents in this way, and when they part from this world, they will rejoice in heaven." Unquote. The other perfections should also be taken into consideration. the Bodhisattva was a person who did not pay attention to all at all to sense pleasures. He had the highest degree of respect for his parents, and he never tired of looking after them. Even though he still had to take care of them, he still used every opportunity to dedicate himself to attaining jhana. Another perfection we should develop in daily life is the perfection of energy, virya. When the Bodhisattva searched for good fruits to offer to his parents, he needed to have endurance and energy. When we think of the 10 perfections in our case, we should consider how our conduct is in the present life that has followed upon our lives in the past, and that is conditioned by our accumulations in the past. One life was succeeded by a following life without interruption, and we were born into different lives as such or such person in such or such place. The perfection of renunciation, nekamma, is the elimination, the giving up, and the subduing of attachments to sense objects, the departing from them. We only realize with regard to this life that we cling to visible object, sound, odor, flavor, and tangible object. To what extent can we gradually become more detached from these objects? We should see the benefit of developing the perfection of renunciation. Someone may have given up the lay life and become a monk, but if he still clings to the 5 sense objects just as a layman, there is no difference between a monk or a layman. Therefore, the perfection of renunciation does not merely mean leaving the household life and becoming a monk. Renunciation means having the energy and the courage to eliminate the clinging we all have to visible object, sound, and the other sense objects. So long as we have not attained the excellent state of the non-returner, we have not eradicated clinging to sense objects. We should know ourselves as we are. We should know whether we are sincere and whether we have the firm determination to eliminate the clinging to the 5 sense objects. We are, for example, attached to color when we look at pictures, when we find them beautiful and delightful. Generally, we see something beautiful, we are likely to have enjoyment and clinging, lobha, when we see that. If there is heedfulness, it can be known that at such a moment this is only a reality, a dhamma that appears. Attachment can decrease by not trying to obtain the attractive object, so that we accumulate even more attachment. Thus, when there is a pleasant object, we can see it. But when it is not there and we cannot see it, we should not search for it. We may usually eat delicious food, and when we eat too much, it is bad for our body. However, the citta that is attached to the flavor of food causes us to eat even when we are not hungry. If we can eliminate clinging, if we can have renunciation with regard to flavor, we shall eat just enough to satisfy our hunger. And if possible, we shall not even relish the food so much. Someone may not be hungry, and he knows that he will feel uncomfortable if he still eats. However, because the food is so delicious, he will just savor one morsel. This shows that he does not have renunciation. if there is renunciation, someone can begin to train himself by endurance, and thus he needs to have also the perfection of patience, so that he will eat just sufficiently to satisfy his hunger. He knows when the amount of food is enough and will be of use to his body. We can understand that it is most difficult to be free from clinging to the sense objects, because even training oneself to decrease clinging is already very difficult. Therefore, we should develop moral strength so that all the perfections can assist Satipatthana to be aware of the characteristics of realities more often in daily life. If we have patience, we can endure the experience of heat or cold. When the weather is hot, we do not need to make special efforts to have a cold bath, or when it is cold, we do not need a warm bath. For some people, it may be necessary for their body to take care of the right temperature of their baths. However, when this is not the case, we may just be attached to the temperature of the water. Some people, when they have a warm bath, just feel comfortable and pleasant. Even though their body is strong and they do not need a warm bath, they just like to have this pleasant sensation. Or sometimes they take pleasure in having a cold bath. When someone understands the perfection of renunciation, he can have more endurance, no matter whether he experiences heat or cold. He also needs the perfection of patience and of energy. Nobody can tell someone else to give up attachments to sense pleasures, nor can one tell oneself to do this, but it must be Panya which understands the true meaning of the perfection of renunciation. We read in the Jatukani Manavapucha, Jatukani's questions, of the Kula Nidesa in the Kudaka Nikaya, quote, "There is renunciation, nekama, when there is seeing, seeing clearly, comparing, considering, development, so that one clearly understands the right practice, the proper practice, the practice that is an enemy, the practice that is beneficial, the practice of Dhamma according to the Dhamma that leads to purity of sila. There is renunciation when there is the guarding of the sense doors, moderation in eating, the application of energy, so that one is alert and awake, sati sampajanya, that is sati and panya. There is renunciation when there are the four applications of mindfulness, the four right efforts, the four bases of success, the five spiritual faculties, the five powers, the seven factors of enlightenment, the eight path factors, nibbana, and the practice to nibbana. When there is renunciation with happiness, there is resistance, a refuge, a protection, no danger, unshakable, the deathlessness, a Dhamma departing from clinging, which is like a threat that fastens. Having seen all this, there is renunciation with happiness." Unquote. It is not so easy to see that renunciation means happiness. We should understand that it must be Panya that sees its benefit, that compares and considers the practice, so that one should follow the right and proper practice that opposes attachment and clinging to visible object, sound, odor, flavor and tangible object. One should see the benefit of the practice of Dhamma according to the Dhamma and develop the 37 factors of enlightenment. Therefore, it must be Panya which understands and knows that renunciation which departs from sense object is to be achieved by sati sampajanya, the 37 factors of enlightenment, the attainment of nibbana and the practice leading to nibbana, as stated by the kulanidesa. And all this is practiced with happiness, which means that one should see the disadvantage and danger of defilements. One should have an unshakable determination to develop panya in order completely to eradicate clinging to sense objects. This has to begin by listening and considering the Dhamma, so that one first sees the benefit of the practice. One should realize that renunciation means happiness, and this kind of happiness is without a self who seeks enjoyment. We should see and understand that detachment from the sense objects leads to the highest calm and well-being. Each of the perfections should be developed together with panya. Otherwise, kusala is not of the degree of a perfection. If one does not see the danger of akusala, and if one does not realize the benefit of the perfections, they cannot be developed. In that case, panya is just too weak to see the benefit of their development. If one's goal is the realization of the Four Noble Truths, one should not only develop panya but also the perfections. Each of the perfections is an important and helpful condition for the realization of the Four Noble Truths. Some people may wonder why it is necessary to develop day after day the perfections together with Satipatthana. Someone who has understanding about the development of the Eightfold Path knows that sati should be aware of the characteristics of realities that are appearing, and that panya gradually considers, notices, and understands the characteristics of the dhammas that are non-self, as nama, the reality which experiences, or rupa, the reality which does not experience. But Satipatthana cannot arise all the time. Still, the fact that one is trying to develop it, that one has listened to the Dhamma and accumulated some understanding of the way of developing Satipatthana, all these factors are conditions for the arising of a level of sati other than the sati of Satipatthana. This means sati of the level of all the excellent qualities which are the perfections. Therefore, each perfection implies a certain level of refined sati. Satipatthana cannot arise all the time. It does not arise when there are no conditions for its arising, when akusala citta arises. However, the fact that the development of Satipatthana has been accumulated can be a condition for the arising of sati of another level, which can be mindful, non-forgetful of kusala. We should develop Satipatthana together with all the perfections, and this for an endlessly long time. We shall then know that Satipatthana gradually will grow together with the perfections which we have developed and accumulated. As we have seen, even when sati of the level of Satipatthana does not arise, the perfections are accompanied by sati of another level, and this level of sati is already very refined. In order to realize the Four Noble Truths, all the perfections should be developed, not only generosity and morality, but also renunciation, the giving up of clinging to the sense objects. We also need to have the perfection of energy and of patience. We should have endurance, and we should not be disturbed by the sense objects, be they desirable or undesirable. We read that the Bodhisattva, in one of his former lives, considered the true nature of his akusala. He knew that it often arose. He realized how difficult it was to give up clinging to the sense objects. We read in the commentary to the Susima Jataka, number 411, that the Bodhisattva considered the citta which had to strive after the giving up of clinging to sense objects, to visible objects, sound, odor, flavor, and tangible object. Quote, the Bodhisattva considered, a sick person cannot turn himself over by his own strength. The hospital nurse has to attach a string so that he can pull himself up, and he should exhort him with the words, come on, pull this string so that you can turn yourself over. And when he pulls that string, he can turn himself over and experiences bodily well-being. But he does not find mental ease, be it even slight. This situation is the same as when beings are inflamed because of their defilements. They cannot uplift themselves and turn away from defilements by means of happiness arising from solitude. Unquote. If there is no clinging to the sense objects, one will have true calm. There will be happiness arising from solitude. One is tranquil and free from clinging to the sense objects. However, in order to become uplifted and turn away from defilements, to become free from clinging, to depart from sense pleasures, we need the assistance of the perfections we have accumulated. Only in that way can we renounce the sense pleasures. We further on read in the commentary to the Susima Jataka, and I quote, this thought occurred to the Bodhisattva during a past life when King Brahmadatta was reigning in Varanasi. The Bodhisattva was at that time the son of the king's priest, and his name was Young Susima. The king's son was named Young Brahmadatta. The two boys grew up together and learned all sciences at Takasila, and when they had accomplished their studies, they became home again. Young Brahmadatta became viceroy, and at his father's death he became king and made young Susima his advisor and priest. One day, the king went around the city in procession seated on the shoulder of an elephant, while he made the priest sit on the back of the elephant. The queen mother, when she stood and looked out from the royal window, saw the priest sitting behind the king, and she fell in love with him and did not want to eat any more. The king went to see her and asked what ailed her, but the queen mother did not want to tell him because she was ashamed. Thereupon the king sent his chief queen, and the queen mother spoke about what had happened. The king entreated the priest to become king, and he made the queen mother his chief queen, while he himself became the viceroy. But from then on, the Bodhisattva was disenchanted with the household life. The queen spoke to him in many ways and used several tricks with him so that he would enjoy his reign. But the Bodhisattva taught Dhamma. He showed the delight and the misery of the sense pleasures, and he returned the kingdom to the viceroy. He became an ascetic sage and cultivated the attainments of jhana and the supernatural powers, so that he became destined for the Brahma world. At the end of this Jataka, the Buddha explained that the chief queen was Rahula's mother, that the king was Ananda, and King Susima was the Buddha himself. Unquote. By relating his past lives and by explaining his past lives, the Buddha explained that nobody can know the force of lobha, nor in what way it will arise in each life. Renunciation from sense pleasures is most difficult, and going forth from the household life to become a monk is even more difficult, because the monk should take careful consideration of the rules of the Vinaya. But anyway, if one wishes to give up sense pleasures, clinging to the sense objects, it is necessary to renounce them by the development of Panya. One should know the characteristics of realities as not a being, not a person, not self. There may be attachment, aversion, seeing, hearing, jealousy, conceit or thinking of the importance of self. All these phenomena are realities that we refer to as different cittas and cetasikas, as different conditions, as realities that through their arising condition one another. All this is complex and deep in meaning. Panya should be able to penetrate the true nature of dhammas at this very moment and realize them as not being a self, as not a being. This is the end of chapter 4 of Ajahn Sujin's book on the perfections.